Welcome to the Nature Reliance Podcast, where we explore the history and practical experience of the great outdoors and discover new ways to connect with nature. I'm Craig Cottle, your guide through the fascinating world of natural living and survival skills through experiential education and interviews. Today's episode is brought to you by the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, an immersive online learning experience designed for outdoor enthusiasts just like you. Are you passionate about the outdoors? Do you crave more knowledge about disaster readiness, wilderness survival, bushcraft, tracking, and nature awareness? If so, the Nature Reliance School Online Membership is your gateway to a community of like-minded individuals, all dedicated to learning and sharing essential outdoor skills. With the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, you get exclusive access to a wealth of resources, including expert-led tutorials, interactive webinars, and a library of engaging courses, downloadable books, and documents. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced outdoorsman, there's always something new to learn. So don't wait. Click on the link below to join the Nature Reliance School Online Membership today. Embrace the wilderness, enhance your skills, and become part of a community that values nature as much as you do. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hey everybody, welcome into another episode of the Nature Reliance Media Podcast. I've got another fantastic interview for you today. Today I sat down with Jamie Burley of the Old World Alliance. Jamie and I had a nice conversation starting out talking about delivering pizzas when we were youngins, as well as I asked my standard questions that I love asking all outdoorsmen, what his most enjoyable, funniest, and humbling experiences in the outdoors were. And I've got to say, he's got a remarkable story to tell as far as the most enjoyable experience and the obligatory, because I've got a bunch of these too, poop story that is probably one of the funniest. So it's hilarious. So you're going to enjoy it. So here is Jamie and I. Hey, Jamie. Welcome to the show. No, that's fine, man. We're very informal here. Welcome to the show, man. Glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So here's what I did, Jamie. You tell me what you think about this, because I'm guessing you've done this as well. Trying to get myself prepared for this, I just did the famous Google search of Jamie Burley. You ever do that on yourself? Because I do it occasionally on myself too, to see who's saying stuff and what's out there. What do you think?
I did, because I didn't want to come on here sounding like a bumbling idiot. So I wanted to be a little bit more prepared. And I was a little taken back. I Googled my own name, and I was taken back. There's a lot of stuff that I've done in concerning the outdoors and where I've been and what I've done. And I wrote it down, and it just seems like a fluffed up resume. I almost didn't even want to talk about it.
I understand.
Wanted to tell you that I delivered pizzas when I was in high school at that point. I didn't want to talk about this.
So did I. Domino's, baby. Was it Domino's, Little Caesars? Who'd you deliver for?
Everybody in town.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, that was my job. That was my summer job right before I went to college, man. I made good money delivering pizza.
You're not lying.
Dude, you can get some good tips delivering pizza.
I made a lot of money. My first job was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken with my cousin.
Yeah.
And, I had to pay for the insurance on a 1972 Nova that
rock and roll.
Bought.
Please tell me it was green.
It was two-door Chevy.
That's classic Chevy Nova.
Yep. I bought it at an auction sale for, I think, $1,000.
Nice.
When I was 14, I bought it with money that I made skinning deer for $5 a piece at the butcher.
Oh my gosh, man!
So I skun a lot of deer.
Yeah,
I get that much.
Right.
And I went to an auction sale because we had a 1972 Nova sitting in a barn, and I bought it, and I chug-lugged it all the way home because I didn't know how to drive a stick shift. I was 14 years old.
You can't find them, grind them. They'll make them out of rubber next year, right?
Yeah. Let's see. It sat in the yard for a year and a half until I got my license. I snuck it out of the driveway a few times when my parents weren't home, tried to wheel it back in the same tracks
right
where it was, because we did move it to mow the lawn and stuff. So we did have some tracks there. So I snuck it out here and there.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I figured out how many hours I had to work making like $3.25 an hour at Kentucky Fried Chicken at the time,
right,
to just pay my insurance. And then I would leave work. Chicken in the fire.
Boom, mic drop. Jamie's out.
Chicken still in the fryers. You name it. I'm out the back door. Made enough to pay my insurance, and I split.
So what you're saying is you didn't want to make Kentucky Fried Chicken a career, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, it was awesome. I just wanted to go out and date girls and have a car to do so with. That's it.
Nice. So tell me about this Google search. What's concerning about it? What's good about it? Tell me about Jamie Burley. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, well, there it's a funny story, because there's a Jamie Burley then and a Jamie Burley now, a big difference. And
who do you want to talk about? Both?
Only a little bit about then, because it makes more sense of where I'm going now, you know?
That sounds good. Let's do it.
I have a resume here that I put on LinkedIn, and I just went to it, and it started in 2009. It looks like developed the Children's Basic Scout Survival Class, and I introduced that program to the local Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and 4-H groups here locally. So a little bit before 2009, I'm going to have to say 2003, I myself and Jeff Kindy created what was called Great Lakes Bushcraft, and you can even see that on Google. And it lasted a few years, and we were teaching I guess you would call it now bushcrafting skills and outdoor stuff, basically scout stuff. He was training the volunteer militia here in Michigan. And he called upon me to teach some of these skills and self-reliance skills to the militia, because that was very relevant to them and their local troops and in law enforcement. Our local militia here actually helps fire department, law enforcement do special events and stuff like that. And isn't like the Wolverines, you know. Then I wrote my very first curriculum in 2010 to the Michigan State University for an outdoor living skills program that was taught at two different Port Huron area school districts for the kids. At the time, that was revolutionary, only because we were able to make fires and use axes and knives on school property with minors. It was huge.
Right.
It was very huge. And I was very, very proud of that accomplishment. I wanted to take that pretty far. I got funded. We got, we took that program really far. And then I discovered the YouTube. I started seeing other people. I started seeing other schools pop up. Other schools started noticing me. And then I got very deep with the Pathfinder School, and I stayed there for the better part of 7 years. I went from being a guest to a class to taking all of their classes to instructing most of their classes to becoming a lead instructor for the program, and then finally ending up in their outfitter store. In without going too much into that, along the way, I got certified in wilderness first aid and medicinal plants, and certified in wilderness first aid, remote medicine certified, Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Trapping U.S. Trappers Education course. I became a certified registered nuisance animal trapper. I started to work as an on-site survival expert and host on Outside Explorer in the National Geographic on two different productions. It actually goes on, and I'm like, it's pretty impressive, you know. But now I don't do any of that.
Right.
I just don't. I believe that I needed to have all this stuff on paper, and I was on a mission to be the man. And a couple of years ago, one of the high points in my outdoor career, I believe, I had a stroke.
And I didn't know that.
I did. I lost vision in one eye. My left eye bulged out and was looking up.
Oh, wow.
It was caused by an aneurysm in one of the three nerves, one of the three optic nerves behind my eyeball. And it was a blood clot. And here's the thing. They said, well, it could be a very bad thing because the blood clot could break free and the brain is right here, like
right
an inch away.
Right.
So we had to be very ginger with that. And
so this was when, Jamie, 2 years ago?
About 2 years ago.
So was that? That's
when I left, SRO.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that happened while you were there, right after you had left.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No, it was the reason, one of the reasons, it was the reason that pushed me to the edge to come back home and leave Indiana. And it was the best choice I ever made, it all the way around.
So you were at that time, you were living in Indiana, working for SRO, the shop, right?
Yes.
And then you went back to Michigan. Where in Michigan? This general location. You don't have to tell
Port Huron, about hour north of Detroit.
Okay. And so that's good for you, moving back home, right?
Yeah.
I can hear it. I can hear it in your voice. Yeah.
But it's funny when I did the Google search and I saw this resume, I immediately wanted to cut the fluff. I wanted to cut a lot of stuff out there, but this is really what kind of made me today. So I that's history that I think should be up, but I don't really talk too much about it. Mm-hmm. I just don't.
So what would you say is the big takeaway from the stuff that you're leaving behind that now makes you who you are? What would you say is that, the big takeaway?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys and gals, a quick break in our episode to talk about a game changer in outdoor cooking, the Fire Maple Backpacking and Camping Stove System. Whether you're hiking, fishing, or even prepping for emergencies, this portable pot and jet burner is a must-have in your gear. Best part? It's nearly half the price of a comparable Jetboil stove system. Thanks to its leading heat exchange technology, you'll experience reduced boiling times by up to 30% compared to traditional stoves, even in windy conditions. That means more time enjoying the outdoors and less time cooking. Are you ready to upgrade your outdoor cooking game? Click the link in the description now to grab yours. Trust me, your outdoor adventures will never be the same.
It put a lot of miles on me. It put a lot of boots on the ground in all kinds of different areas concerning the outdoors and training. And I saw a lot of places. I traveled all over the world. It's kind of hard for me to listen to myself say that because it's hard for me to believe, mm-hmm. you know, I a lot of things happened in a short amount of time that I'm thankful for, and it was a great ride, but now I'm back and I don't want to say I have a mission, but if you ever had a chance to redo, you know, if you're getting in your older, you're getting older, and you look back and you think, boy, if I had a chance to go back and do it over again, I'm a dreamer. And I think I can, and I am, because I'm taking the experience that I've gained, the knowledge that I've learned up till this point, and I'm really on a mission to put programs together to introduce some of the things that really made my outdoor experience a good one, to introduce that to people just starting out, so they would have a better vision of what they want to do and what they want to accomplish. And that is a real life do-over. You know, if you had a chance, right. You know, we all have a chance. We just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm getting back from that is it's life-changing. You know, I actually get a chance. And now it's not like I'm too old. It's not like I'm dead. I get a chance to be a part of that and experience it. And by golly, if you think you could do that, go ahead and do that in some way, shape, or fashion.
That's good stuff. I like it that you're in a place that you feel real good about. That's fantastic.
It took 49 years.
Right. I understand. Yeah.
It's worth the wait, you know. It's okay now. It took a while. I don't think I was mentally capable of handling this anytime prior.
Yeah, I think maturity will bring that to a lot of us, right? It kind of it provides some clarity. Age does, I believe, for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that we can get some of that clarity without some boots on the ground, as you said, experience and years.
You just don't know until you've actually done it. I mean, we see it a lot with the armchair quarterbacks and everybody on the internet doing everything better than we do. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I'm absolutely okay with that. Before, I used to get a chip on my shoulder. I used to throw a napkin at my TV when I'm watching these outdoor TV shows and stuff like that. I used to get all bent out of shape. You know what? As a matter of fact, I got bent out of shape yesterday watching one of them stupid shows on TV. And I'm like, you know, I was now in their shoes, and I'm like, oh, I don't like this space at all. And I'm like, oh, I'm over.
So is that something you do? Do you watch much TV? Because I don't. I don't know the shows very well at all. I can't. People send me stuff and ask me all the time. I'm like, I don't watch the show, so I don't really know. And I like to help people when they're asking me questions, but I don't know how to answer the questions when I'm not watching them.
I was asked to be a part of Alone Season 1. Okay. Episode 1, I was like the third person called. And I worked with them for like, I worked with the team for about 3 months. They didn't have a contract yet. They didn't know how long they were going to be out there for. They were just putting the building blocks together so they could get the legal together to create this contract. And we weren't sure what we were going to get paid, what the end game was, the prize. And I just, at the time, I was a lead instructor at a very prominent school. And I will say this. I was really told, you know, that could be detrimental to my position, only because what if I didn't do well? That would reflect the school. And I get that. That was a little scary. It made me doubt. It made me think, well, I've got a solid job. I you know, a lot of people in this industry are doing this to be recognized, to grow, and to build something up from the ground up after they leave the show. It's like, okay, they've done the show. Mm-hmm. What do you do afterwards to keep the momentum and make a career out of it? Because a lot of people that are on these shows don't do anything else. And you know, honestly, I had something. I will always have something if I wanted to. I had a solid position in the outdoors doing exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't need to challenge myself. I just thought I could do it myself. I'm like, gosh, if I get out there, you tell me I get to pick the items in a winter type scenario, and I can hunt fish and trap and cut a living out of the wilderness. I said, I won't come home. I said, when do you want to stop?
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of laughed and they said, what do you mean? And I kind of talked with them more. And then I started talking about safety and security, of not only the cast, but the crew members and the people on site. So I, for about 4 seasons, I was talking with production, and I wanted to be behind the scenes, dealing with dangerous animals and protection and safety of the crew. And I'm like, I can do like that. They make just as much as the participants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm not risking anything. And it would be a lot of experience gained on my part for production, post-production, all of that type of work. That really, especially working with nuisance animals and having the credentials, I'm like, gosh, this, I want to do this. So I had a family at the time, and I couldn't take that much time off for every season. So what I chose to do is work behind the scenes, and I was helping cast and go through all the applicants for that show and a couple others behind the scenes. So right. I could do that at home. And I'm like, you know what? That feels better to me. I can help in a different fashion and still get a paycheck working with those people. So
that's good. Interesting. So yeah. You did that with Alone, and you did that for other shows as well too, huh?
Yeah. Outside Explorer, National Geographic. I did one called, you've probably heard of it, 'cause I named it Live Free or Die.
Hmm.
I'm not sure which channel it was, A&E, I believe, A&E channel. And it was on for like 13 seasons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was called Live Free or Die. And I believe I'm in the credits in the end. So yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. I don't know what that show is. What was that? Was that show an outdoor show as well?
It was a little bit, this was a little bit more up my alley. This was working in the Blue Ridge Mountains on a logging road that was only occupied by a few families. And they all were trying to be more self-sufficient. One of them was living in a bus in the woods. One of them had a farm. One of them tried to be totally off grid. And it made production very easy to get around and film a whole lot, because they were on location. It was on the same road. Right. They just camped out there, and that's what they did. And they did it seasonally. It was a really big hit. You could see what was going on from the beginning stages of them, like starting off with like rabbits to getting goats to taking care of a whole hillside that they wanted to turn into a garden. And it was really like self-reliant, self-sufficient living. I really got into that one a lot.
Nice.
It wasn't too staged, and I'll tell you, all TV is staged.
Right.
It wasn't too staged. It just got to be like revisiting your crazy cousin and the uncle's, or your crazy cousin's house in the country every holiday. You know, you just check up on these guys, or they're doing this. And it was interesting, like the first 6 seasons, and then it just got deep. It just got deep. It was like it's time to cut it off.
Right, right. Well, I've got some questions here I like to ask of just about everybody I get on. You okay for that?
Yeah, let's shoot, man.
Yeah.
Shoot.
First one is for you personally, what's your most enjoyable time that you've had in the outdoors? Is there one that stands out to you that is remarkably an enjoyable time?
The first thing that comes to mind is a hunting trip. Yeah, I was by myself, and I went to my friend's farm, and I was bow hunting. It was early season, and it was the first time I was in this area of his farm. So I just, instead of walking out to a blind that I had set up, I started just stalking or still hunting. And for those of you that don't know what still hunting is, my interpretation of still hunting is moving so slow in the woods, you're able to just hunt from where you're at. Like I would find a location, pick my pathway through the vegetation or through the woods, and I would take a step softly, slowly, not really moving at all, just take a small but precise step and wait and make sure that I look at every leaf, every tree, everything in my area. And it may take me an hour to move 30 feet, you know, an hour. And I didn't get very far because no matter how slow I'm moving, the game is still moving. Okay. So right. It's a front seat. It's a really enjoyable way for those that's never stalked or still hunted to see a lot of animals. Some people would think the other, just because you're out in the open, you're exposed. But you're not. When, you know, trees don't move. When animals are noticing the area they're in and they're moving, if you're standing still, not making a lot of commotion, you know, they don't notice you as much. So I was in camouflage. Well, I was in plaid, dark colored jeans, and I had my bow.
What was it Fred Bear said? The best camouflage is to sit down and shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. Always keep the wind in your face though. That's the big one. It didn't take long before a small herd of deer started to work its way down this little woodlot that I was walking. And I got within 3 feet. I could touch a few of these yearlings that they knew I was there. They smelled me. It was a farm. They understood what a human smelled like. So they weren't really spooked, but they weren't totally at ease either. But I decided to follow with their group. I started to walk with the deer herd and follow with them for the better part of the day. And my speed picked up. They got used to the smell. They got used to me. They got used to me rubbing my nose or scratching my ear, moving around. I watched their body language and I learned so much from that time spent with that moving, roving through the woods with that deer herd. It was totally cool. I did end up shooting one. I'm going to say that it isn't like a Cinderella story. At the end, I chose one with a limp. I stayed with them long enough to recognize it was a young deer, that there were a lot bigger deers and small buck with that group, but one of them had a noticeable limp. And I took that one at the end, and we followed that deer herd all the way back almost to where we started from. They were doing a big circle, and I took that one clean. And to tell you the truth, after I shot and after the way it reacted, the other deer didn't run because I didn't run. They thought that I was part of their herd. It was a weird, awesome experience. I really, really appreciated that. I had a really good time that day. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, that is really good stuff. Really good stuff. What about, is there a time that you can remember that you would say is the funniest time that you've had in the outdoors?
On me, it was. Joke's on me, yes. A lot of my stories, I think, are going to go back to hunting or the woods, because that's kind of what I do.
Right. Sure. I understand that. I'm with you on that.
I was up in Meeker. I believe it was Meeker in Michigan, about 3.5 hours away. And I was bow hunting again. And it was colder. It was almost gun season. And I remember getting out of my stand. Or blind. I had gun blinds, and for some reason the gun blinds are really low, you know, just enough to peek out of and shoot. So when I got to this gun blind, I was directed to hunt up out of, because it was a really good spot. I couldn't shoot my bow because, of course, the upper limb would hit the roof. Right. So I'm like, this sucks. Now I'm like, okay, I'm going to hunt on the outside of this blind. I go to the outside and I'm like, man, I look like a fool. Out here, I'm sitting behind a big old block house. This is dumb. So I decided to go, you know, still hunt. I don't know, 50, 75 yards away from that shooting shed. And I had to go to the bathroom. I had to go number two. I'm like, I hate going to the bathroom. Listen, I hate going number two in the woods. I don't care who you are. I hate going number two. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want to stop hunting. I don't want to hustle to one side and then go to the bathroom. I'm hunting, man. I'm in the thick of things. I don't want to. Oh, I gotta go. So
the urge to purge.
I did have the proper necessities to take care of my
cleanliness.
That foot, right? And I take my bibs off. I sit on a log. I find a log. It was a good place to poop. Okay, it was a good place to poop. And I do my business. I clean up. I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to hunt. And I'm like, I better get out of here. You know, they're going to smell this. I kicked a leaf. I'm like, I kicked a small impression in the ground and everything. Like, I'm hunting. I didn't want this to mess everything up.
Sure.
Okay. 15 minutes later, I find another great spot. And I sit down in this little clump of trees from a downfall. And I turn and I catch a whiff of it. I'm like, whoa, that's not cool.
Where you went to the bathroom, you're smelling. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm like, oh man, no way.
Yeah.
And I smell the other way. I tilt my head over my other shoulder and I take a whiff. I'm like, whoa.
Oh my gosh.
Man. Smell it. And then I'm checking my boots. Right. I'm like, man, is it on my boots? What the heck? You know, I'm everywhere. Right. And now I'm like, nothing's going to come around here. So right. I go another couple hundred yards away and I sit down, I get all situated and I turn my head to look upwind. I smell it again.
Oh my gosh, Jamie.
I'm like, come on.
Where is it?
Right. This happens two more times. And I'm like, man, I'm within sight of the road now in the cabin. I'm just going, I'm just so frustrated at this point. And, I'm walking back and I see a blood trail where I intersected the main trail back to the cabin. My dad, of course, had already shot a deer and it's hanging up on the on the buck pole. And I walk into the little trailer that we had for a cabin. And he's sitting there like making lunch.
He's done. Dad's done. Dad's always done first.
I know. He's sitting there making lunch. He has the little kerosene heater going. He's making lunch and everything else. And he goes, well, did you need help dragging him out? You know, he's kind of rubbing it in. I'm like, no. He's like, did you see anything? I said, no. And I didn't tell him what happened at all. Okay. I kicked off my boots. I made sure that there's nothing on my boots. I kicked off my boots and I turned around and undid my bibs. I took off my bibs to hang them on the wall. And he goes, what is that?
Oh my gosh, man.
I go, what? And I look on my bib and there's the biggest splatter of stuff on the inside of my bibs that you can ever.
Oh my gosh, man. Poop stories are the best.
I couldn't believe it. I felt like such a jerk.
Right. Oh man.
That was fun.
So mystery solved.
Yeah.
Right.
He was following me around.
Oh man. All right. So next question about these outdoor trips. Okay. Humble. When's the most that you felt like you were humbled?
A knife only class that I took. It was Jason Hunt. He was teaching it. He said, come on down, man. I'm doing a knife only class. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like fun. I'm all cocky right now. That sounds like fun. He says, well, we're going to have a few items. And he told me what to bring. I'm like, oh, you mean we're going camping.
Right.
So just in case the students couldn't get shelter or fire or something, you know, it was something to make sure that everybody was safe. It was smart. It was smart plan. And we get to the class and in pure Jason style, he's like, all right, let's see everybody's items. Drop what you got on the hillside. Okay. We dropped what we got. And he said, okay, everybody pick up your knife. Okay. We picked up our knife. And then he's like, put all the rest of the stuff in these buckets, put them in your car.
Right.
Okay. It turned into a knife only really quick. And it didn't bother me too much because I was still kind of cocky and thought, hey, no problem. But it's a funny thing about that hardware, that gear. I was questioning the size of my knife at that point. I never thought about carrying a big knife at that point, right?
Right.
But it hit me, and it was very, very a humbling experience when I thought that I didn't have a big enough knife. I never felt that way before.
Right.
But when I had to depend on it, that's when it hit me. I'm like, okay, now we're going to do this. Well, he split us up into teams. And the first thing we had to do, because there was a storm coming, we had to make shelter and fire, right? Of course, that's what we did. And shelter, no problem. And other people got their primitive fire. And I just could not. It wasn't because of my blade. It wasn't because of it being smaller than normal. I only had like a 4-inch blade. I was still processing and splitting down the cedar logs that were there. That was absolutely fine. The wood was wet on the outside, but dry on the inside. No big deal when it comes to primitive fire. But I tried and tried and tried and tried. And it was one of those days when it comes to primitive fire that I just couldn't get it.
Understand.
And I totally was white and I couldn't move. I couldn't operate. It was hot. It was muggy. We got some water in me. We got some emergency in me. There was no coming back. I hit a point, and all I could do was just lay there. And I'm like, here I am, an instructor. I should be rocking this, and I just didn't. I could not perform. And I was totally exposed to everybody. And I'm like, look, man, this can happen. I said, it was one of the first times when I just couldn't. The only thing I could do was lay there. It was it was super humbling. Super humbling.
Yeah. Yeah. The woods don't care about labels like expert or instructor and stuff like that, do they? They just don't care. The woods don't.
No, but for something that I was pushing for so long about these big knives, don't need these big knives, I don't know. The first thing I thought about is I don't have a big enough knife. It was a weird thing.
And so what do you think the big knife would have brought to you in use that you didn't have? I mean, how would that have benefited you?
Kind of the and here's the thing. I think this mentality about an axe, a bigger axe does more work, period, end of story. Less chops, less effort. Okay. It will do more things. I can do more things with a big axe or a big knife than I can with a small one. It may not be as precise, and it may not be as, I'm just going to stick with precise at that point. Mm-hmm. I can do everything else with a big knife, but the small knife is not going to chop efficiently. I have to work twice as hard to produce, let's just say, a shelter. Maybe cutting sticks for traps, poles that are very important for stakes. I'm working 2 and 3 times harder using a small belt knife than I am a big one. So I'm not winning at that point just because it fits on my belt better, or I think I'm going to use it more. The priorities when I'm in the woods, when I need to pull out a tool, I don't want to work 3 times harder to effectively get the same outcome.
True.
It was eye-opening for me at that point.
Very good. And that's something now, and this is what I like to point out about humbling experiences, that's something that you share with other people, as you just did. So now your experiences, I always like to say you're either growing or you're learning. I mean, you're either winning or you're learning. There is no losing out there. You're learning. And when you get humbled, when we all get humbled, when we learn or we make mistakes, what are called mistakes, if we can take them and share those with others, then possibly those people don't make those same mistakes. And it's a really, really good thing. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
I do wholeheartedly. And I don't want to say now. It's just when we say experts and experience and all this stuff, I almost want to throw the flag in the air. And it's... at some point, we have to recognize ourselves, not anybody else. We have to recognize that we've got a lot of time in this game and we have a lot to share. We just don't have a good avenue to promote this and to share it. So part of what I want to do, or my mission that I'm hell-bent on doing, is having these small camps, these small experiences, taking people out and talking just like we are now, and sharing what I would do in those circumstances, because legitimately or realistically, I would be their guide at that point and moment, because I know the easements, the property. I want to make sure all of the campers and the students would be safe. They're in a new area, so it's my obligation to take care of these folks. But I want to make sure they're taken care of and they're learning. And if they're not under pressure and they're not a forced a schedule at that point, when we're just experiencing the woods, they're going to come back. They're going to want to learn more. I'm not going to cram 4 days of information into them in a weekend. We're not doing our students a good service at that point. I want them to be very at ease. I want them more susceptible to learning and taking these this time that I get to spend with these students into play. I want them to really take something from the experience instead of a stupid little craft or something that they make. I want them to have an experience to want to come back. If they pay the money and they go home with a couple trinkets that they make and they sit by a campfire and have some good food, some people will be okay with that. I'm not at that point. I think there's, if we have a little bit of time to spend with these new students and these people to experience the outdoors at that time, now we have to really show them how to enjoy it, not to force information down their throat. My teaching methodology has changed. My thought process has changed. I think I've become better in the way that if I had an instructor with 25 years experience, this is what I would be telling my student that just fell off the bus with all the gear and didn't know nothing. I am excited now to be with those people because I have so much to share with them and to make their trip or their experiences a little less sucky.
Very good. I like that answer. Hey, I guess the next one would be, you and I both took an opportunity to query some folks on social media. I'd like to get to a couple of those questions too. They would like to know what the most memorable teaching moment you had.
The most memorable teaching moment I've had. I'm going to say it happened a couple of days ago. A couple of days ago, and I wasn't teaching at the time. I'm on the mend from an injury on my foot. So I've been doing silly, dumb work on the computer and doing what I can from a desk right now. And I had a gentleman, a good friend now, but at the time, about a year and a half ago, he contacted me out of the blue from one of these groups I belong to. I openly put out there in this, if you need help with anything concerning primitive fire. Now, isn't that kind of funny? The thing that I had the most trouble with in my last story, now I'm given help, right? So who am I? Haha.
Right.
I said, if you need any help and you're having troubles with this, let me know. And a couple people reached out to me and it was good stuff. But he did everything right, everything to the books, everything that I would have done. I'm like, gosh, I really don't know. I said, let's dig deep, brother. Let's dig deep. Let's really dissect this thing. Then I started pulling some crazy Tom Brown stuff out, man. It was the weirdest thing ever. I have a mutual friend that was an instructor for Tom for like 3 years. He's really, really good. He's really good. And he said, Jamie, he said, you know the point where you're carved your notch, you've shaved and trimmed all of the burnt material off the end of your spindle, and you're dust pile is filling up about half of the space or half of the thickness of your hearth board, and you're getting very close to that critical time where we're going to get that point where we're going to ignite that dust pile and create an ember. But it just doesn't happen. He said, what happens is the dust starts to make contact with the end of the spindle, and that's not a good thing. Because even though that you carved airways underneath of your hearth board so you can get air coming in from the side to help fuel that ember when it happens, you need oxygen in there to superheat to help that point of that superheated pocket of air to heat up the dust enough to ignite that char, to turn it into an ember. And what we're doing is we're starving the dust from oxygen, that extra little element, that superheated oxygen, the point at which it's the top of the dust pile in the bottom of the spindle, that area is not there any longer. He said, what you do after you remove all of the charred surface of your spindle for your attempt at getting a coal at that point, while the end of the spindle is super hard, even though it is a softer material in your spindle, you know, what you do is you take your knife tip and you bore in the center of your spindle, making a hollow funnel, okay? Because what you want is the out, basically at that point, all right, there's not much at all in the bottom of your socket that you carve. You want the outer third of your spindle making contact, creating dust, but what you've now is created a concavity that will hold superheated air now, because that spindle, you know how hot that spindle gets, that superheated air is just like throwing gasoline on that ember.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets it every single time now. And that was what I shared with him. And that was what took him over the edge. And he's passing that on to other people, getting it consistently now. It was like, okay, that was a really good piece of information that he had received. And I'm like, cool, my job's done. Cool. Okay, that worked. There's a couple other things, but I'm like, you don't need to know no more. That's cool. You got it. Well, he contacted me the other day while I was sitting on the couch, probably watching Name That Tune with my wife, you know, Netflix and whatever. And he sent me a video. He said, man, before I put this out there, I want you to look at this. And I looked at it and I could not have done any better. He did it 150%. And his method, what he's doing, he even changed some things up. He just said, before I put this out there, I want you to look it over to make sure it's okay. I said, brother, you're on it. I said, you're way better than me, because you can do it and you can do it better. I said, I am beside myself. At that point, the little bit of information, because it was mostly him, he did 95% of all the work,
right?
And he just used a little bit of my help. He did all the work and he did a great job, and he's only getting better. So if I can drop a little bit of what I gained to somebody that's just starting, who knows what they can do from here on forward.
Right.
That blew my mind. That blew my mind.
That's key. That's good stuff. Real good stuff. All right. Number two from Rob Schneider at the OWA Lodge. If you had to teach only one subject, what would it be and why? Good luck on that. That's one subject. Yeah, that's hard.
You know what? I'm going to say, oh gosh, I'm having an internal struggle right now in my head. Okay. Half of my brain is
laid out. Let's hear it both.
You know, my one side is survival, because I think that is the utmost priority in why I'm teaching. I want to make sure people are safe and enjoying themselves and getting home safe. I don't want them to get hurt. I want to teach them what's going to keep their 98.6 until they walk back in the house. Okay. Survival, your priorities and how to positively affect those things, so you make it home. That's the goal, right? after you learn survival, because survival is simple. Survival is so simple. People overcomplicate things. Okay. They just need to keep themselves alive to live the rest of their life. Survival plays such an important but small role. That's a crazy, crazy thing to profess. You getting us getting in a survival, wilderness survival situation is the same astronomical odds of us winning the jackpot of the lottery like seven times in a row, seven times over and over and over and over and over again. Those are pretty big odds. So if the chances of us really getting in that life or death survival situation is the odds are so astronomically against us, why do we focus so much on it? Okay. So I feel the other half of my brain, when you ask me that question, is the art of camping. Going out and in taking a day trip, an overnight, a weekend, gradually building up, learning how to enjoy yourself in the woods with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to be a minimalist or you want to take the RV up, okay? When people, let's say people get in a survival situation, or let's say they get in two survival situations in their lifetime and they're 40 years old. Okay, you're talking about a week out of your whole life and you're still living. What about the rest of the time? I'm sure if the odds now of you becoming or getting into a survival situation where your life's in danger, if you were taking the time and you like the outdoors, because that's how you got into those situations in the beginning, in my hypothetical. Now that you know how to operate in the woods, you're enjoying yourself in the woods and you feel more comfortable out there, the odds are going to be less that you'll find yourself in a crazy predicament. So let's teach the absolute basic standards on your survival priorities and meeting them in a kit that's personal to you. And in teaching you how to use those things to keep you alive long enough to get back home and live in life again. And not being sheltered from the outdoors. So I would have to say the art of camping and going outdoors and enjoying yourself. Because that's what I love. That's what if people want to be taught something and they're outdoorsy, we can touch base on a lot of these skills and still make their camp enjoyable. You know, it's not a wreck. They're enjoying their time. They're cooking the right food. They're using the right gear safely. There's so much to experience when you're striking a camp. It's just, you can make it very enjoyable, or it could be really sucky. But not a lot of people talk about camping anymore.
Yeah,
it's a really good time out in the woods.
Yeah, it's good for health, mind, body, spirit. It's good. It's good stuff.
But I think we should cover it like no other. I think we should survival. We should really teach the absolute basics when it comes to survival and keeping your butt alive and knowing what your personal needs are to do that. And then get off the subject a little bit. Let's spend time living in learning and having fun at these camps and experiencing new things, because that amount of software, I heard this term the other night in my live. I was talking with Jonathan MacArthur, and he said survival and skills is like teaching in gear. Teaching and learning and these skills that you carry in your head is software. The hardware is the gear that helps you put these skills into motion. The heavy stuff you have to carry. We will first put some hardware together to build our survival kit and know how to use it, not to be redundant, not to do long-term wilderness living, because that's bull crap. We want a survival kit to get us home as quickly as possible. That's our hardware. And we're going to build our software from here on forward and learn. That makes that little bit of hardware that is small, compact, a little bit more effective. And that's where my head is at. That's my space right now. Good. I don't know what that is, but that's what it is.
So the next question, which you walked right into it, which is good, is in this coming year, I always like to say, hey, what's Jamie going to be doing in the coming year? Is that going to be your focus? Is that what you're looking at doing, trying to formalize that? Or
yes, absolutely. Back in the day, I really tried to hustle. I really tried to hit as many events as I could. I'm getting older. There's a lot of work that I want to do digitally and put my creative content into some sort of an organized manner, a website, and online classes and stuff. But I'm not in a rush for that. I'm not in a rush for that because my pursuit is to make the best basic survival class that you can possibly have with the resources we have now, the free internet experience, all of my friends in the industry that have all of these things going on. I'm not trying to set myself aside from anybody because they're doing great. Okay. They have great programs and I don't want to deter, detract, or say that mine is good or better than any of theirs. I just want to put emphasis on building a perfect survival class. A very basic standardization, a standard class, a standard kit. You enter X, Y, and Z. You build on it however you want with all of your extra classes, your extra gear, the things that you feel more comfortable with carrying, knock your socks off. I want to build a good foundation, a good starting point. And I feel my that's where I want to focus. If we build that so strong, no matter what crazy survival hack, crazy underwater basket weaving class they go to, it doesn't matter at this point. We know that they're going to be safe. They've got a personal survival kit that's going to keep them safe so they can take as many crazy classes as they want. That's cool. That's my goal. I want to have something that somebody 8 to 80, blind, crippled, or crazy are going to take something from and learn from it, and then they put the book down. They go on to taking care of themselves now, and that's where my goal is to create the master curriculum. It's our survival master class, and then on the website I have all of the accompanying videos and all of the crafts and all the other stuff that I do on a daily is located there. That's it. It's kind of creating my own little space to find me because. The last couple of years, I was very spread out, dispersed. I had too many irons in the fires. Now we're really zooming in and focusing on what we should be doing right now. And I think we're on track.
Very good. Which brings me to my last question. Where do people find all this?
You can go to oldworldalliance.com or just Google Jamie Burley.
Which we found is something else, right?
Yeah, it was great. You know, here's the thing. Facebook, love it or hate it, that's where everybody's at. You know, it's horrible and great all at the same time. You know, that's where we're at, people. If you get a little bit too crazy, you're going to get booted. If you don't like politics or religion or getting your butt hurt, don't go there. But that's where everybody's at. Right. That's why we have our little private group there in the lodge, just so we have a congregation of like-minded fools all throwing ideas out there. And if they want to go a little bit further and more in depth and spend more time with the exact teachings and what I've got going on, we have a pay site. And I try to keep that as inexpensive as I can, you know, $10 a month or $100 a year. And that's where I put everything.
And this has been great, Jamie. It's been good to get to know you better.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. I feel like I've just been jaw-jacking the whole time. My face hurts.
That's all right. I wanted you to. I wanted our listeners to be able to get a chance to hear from you specifically. Yeah. So this has been good.
Well, I probably lost followers and have more haters now.
Oh, well, who cares about the haters, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's been good. I'm going to sign us off here, Jamie.
All right.
Hey, thanks for being here, brother.
All right. Thank you.
And that wraps up another fantastic episode of the Nature Blinds podcast. I hope today's journey has inspired you to explore and connect with the natural world in new and exciting ways. Before I say goodbye, remember to check out the Nature Blind School online membership. If today's episode sparked your interest in wilderness skills and outdoor adventures, this online community is the perfect place for you to start or continue your journey. You can currently sign up for a year for only $99 and get 2 months for free. Click the link below to discover a world of expert-led courses, engaging content, and a vibrant community eager to share their knowledge and experiences. Whether you're starting your outdoor journey or looking to deepen your existing skills, the Nature Reliant School online membership is here to guide you. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe for more adventures and share this podcast with your fellow nature enthusiasts. Until next time, come on, join in. Let's learn together.